Welcome to Speaking of Business, conversations with Canadian innovators, entrepreneurs, and business leaders. I'm Goldie Hyder, President and CEO of the Business Council of Canada. Today, we're going to meet Mike Ketchin, co-founder and CEO of Wealthsimple, a Toronto-based financial services startup. In just 5 years, Wealthsimple has grown to more than $4 billion in assets. And shortly after our conversation, the company announced another big funding round, the latest step on the road to an eventual public stock offering. Not bad for a 31-year-old first-time CEO. I spoke with Mike at Wealthsimple's offices in an old brick-and-beam walk-up in Toronto's trendy West End. You might even hear a creaky floor or two, a sharp contrast to Bay Street's glittering bank towers. Enjoy our conversation. Michael, thank you so much for doing this. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
I wish the audience could see the facility. You know, it's so different. Tell us about why Wealthsimple is set up the way it is, and what is Wealthsimple?
Well, Wealthsimple is a digital investment firm. We try to use technology and design to make investing simple for everybody. And we're set up here in an office in the West End of Toronto. It's a brick and beam, you know, three-story walk-up building. About 200 or so people here in this particular location.
Rustic feel, hardwood floors. Is there a ping pong table in here somewhere?
Of course there is.
Of course there is.
We wouldn't live up to the expectations if we didn't have at least one ping pong table.
I wish I was born again, to tell you the truth, and get to go through life with you.
Yeah. No, we love it here. We've been here in this office for about a year and a half. We've outgrown it, unfortunately. So now we have the daunting task of finding the next space. And Toronto, for better or worse, right now has about 0% capacity.
Yeah.
So that's a challenge for a business like ours.
Well, look, we jumped right ahead to what is. We should talk about how we got here. You know, how old are you? Do you mind me asking that question?
No, I am 31.
You're 31. So you're 26 years old, roughly, I guess, when this all kind of started out.
Correct.
Your friends are harassing you for, you know, financial advice because, you know, you did a couple of degrees at Ivy. And your reaction to them was, you know, I'm going to start a company. Is this how this all came about?
It's a little more organic than that. So I love investing. My sister ended up actually getting me excited about investing at 12 years old. She randomly entered me into a stock picking contest that I went on to
win.
Is
this Jody?
This is Jody.
Yeah.
Jody Kovitz, who founded Move the Dial.
I had the pleasure of meeting her the other day.
You know, Jody is out there meeting everybody. She's an amazing networker and building something awesome in Move the Dial. But she entered me in this stock picking contest at 12 years old that I went on to win, and it inspired a lifelong love of investing. And so fast forward many years, I was working in Silicon Valley in California. We sold the business that we were building, and a few friends made a little money off the deal that they wanted to invest. And they knew I loved to do it, so they came to me for help. And my advice was, it is so easy to manage your own money. You should just do it yourself. And I built a model in Excel that showed you how to build a portfolio of ETFs, how to rebalance it.
Tell our listeners what ETFs are.
ETFs are exchange-traded funds, a really simple way to build a portfolio, generally low-cost kind of baskets of different stocks and bonds, that sort of thing. My belief was I just wanted to empower this group to do it themselves. And their feedback was, Mike, we love this approach, but heck, we're lazy. Just do it for us. And that became the first insight was here was this group that knew that investing was important, but didn't want to do it themselves. They didn't want to hire a traditional advisor to do it for them. They wanted something else. And we've been iterating on that problem over the past 5 years. And today, you know, we're fortunate we've grown the business. We have about $4.5 billion of assets under management, about 150,000 clients across the country, and feel like we're just getting started in terms of the opportunity that is to reinvent financial services for the next generation.
Take us through the journey. I mean, it's only 5 years, so it's not going to be a long story, but how did you get from, you know, where you were to where you are so fast?
It's been a whirlwind. It's hard to kind of piece together the journey. I was doing a talk yesterday at a startup that's a couple of years kind of behind us in its maturity. They were asking me about the first 1,000 customers, which really feels like it was yesterday. And how do we get our first 1,000 customers? And I was talking about just the need for hustle, that we used to do things like, I used to have a policy where you can imagine in our business, one of the biggest challenges is trust. So for our first 1,000 customers, I'd go out and I'd pitch people on this great new idea of low cost investing, making it really easy with technology. And the first question I would get was, well, great, how many clients do you have? And I would say, well, if you sign up, we'd have one.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to be the first client in the business. And so the first 1,000 clients was all about just out hustling our competition so that we would earn the trust of the clients that we brought on board. And I used to do things like when someone would sign up on the website, I would try to call them within 30 seconds of sign up just to wow.
Reassure them just that there's a person there.
Yeah. You know, hey, this is Mike. I'm the CEO of the company. I just want to say thank you so much for signing up. How'd you hear about us? You have my number. If you ever have feedback or questions, give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. And so, you know, it was funny because yesterday it took me right back to those moments of just doing everything we possibly could to fight for each client. And then, you know, the business has evolved. We did a deal quite early in our life cycle with Power Financial, which has been a fantastic partner for the last 4 years or so.
And that's not normal territory for them.
It's not. I mean, we were the first of their now growing fintech investment platform, a really bold move for a company like Power that, you know, manages some fairly large, you know, more incumbent platforms in the investment and insurance industries. And they've been great partners. And their investments have enabled us to accelerate our efforts where we've been able to build out a truly great brand and marketing campaign to scale up the business and try and build that kind of trust with Canadians about what it is we do and how we help people invest.
When you decided to take the investment from Power Corp, obviously the money is helpful, but what was it also about validation?
Yes. I think that for us, as I mentioned, one of the biggest challenges in our space is trust. We sell trust. And we thought that by having an institution that could command trust because it had a lot of assets under administration or management.
And a long history and a brand.
Exactly. We could borrow some of that through the association that might help us establish trust sooner than we were able to earn it on our own two feet. So that was certainly one of the things that that helped make that an obvious choice in partnering with Power.
How competitive is the industry for you?
You know, our challenge is we operate in a very small piece of the industry. So we get this report on a quarterly basis around market share, and we have about a 70 or 80% market share of digital advice in Canada. Challenge is digital advice is still such a small piece of the overall investment industry, which is, you know, a $4 trillion industry. And so our job is to grow the heck out of this industry and make sure that people understand it as a credible option, understand the benefits of it. And we spend a lot of time trying to think about how do we grow this industry rather than we do about competition and what features or products they might be coming out with. Because ultimately, we don't want to steal their clients. We just want to grow the industry as a whole.
Take us back prior to Wealthsimple. Now, you moved down to Silicon Valley and to work with a startup. For most entrepreneurs, Canadian entrepreneurs, that's a one-way ticket. And yet, you chose to come back.
Yeah.
Why? How? What do we need to know?
Lots of reasons. Personal reasons. So I, at the time, was dating someone in Toronto. I had been doing long distance for years. And when we sold the business in California, it kind of came to a come-to-Jesus moment of, is this going to work or are you going to stay in California? So there was that weighing. And
we'll need to make sure anybody who's leaving Canada first has to find their significant other
truly,
and then they're allowed to go get a job.
Now
somewhere.
We're married and have a wonderful daughter at home. And so, you know, that worked out really well. But also I was observing from a distance what was happening in Canadian tech. And I was really inspired about what felt like a moment in Canada where there was a cohort of companies that were getting to a size and scale that we hadn't seen in years. And it wasn't one company. It wasn't just RIM. It wasn't just, you know, Nortel. There was a cohort, several different businesses that seemed like they were on the verge of exploding. Mm-hmm. And it was the start of people seeing Canada as a credible place to invest. You know, international VCs looking at Canada. Talent was just becoming a topic of, you know, the kind of talent being produced at Waterloo and Toronto and in Montreal. And I wanted to be a part of that. I'm a proud Canadian. I think that Canada is one of the greatest places on the planet. And I think that we have a lot of challenges in our future. And it felt like as someone that cares about this place and with the platform of the opportunity in tech, now would have been a great time to come and be a part of that and build a business based in Canada that could participate in that transformation.
Well, A, we're glad you found your partner in life that you did, because that's clearly the reason you're here. But B, we're glad you love the country as much as you do and you came back. Do you think there's a big cultural difference between Silicon Valley and Canada's tech sector? Or is that changing now?
It is changing. I would say it's not changing fast enough. I still worry that Canadians aren't ambitious enough. You know, one of the coolest things is I think about my time in San Francisco, and San Francisco has got all sorts of problems today. Don't get me wrong. You know, But one of the coolest parts is you go out to a bar or a restaurant in San Francisco or a coffee shop, and everybody there is working in tech. You know, someone founded a company on your left, on the right, they're working at Google or Facebook or, you know, a million other really cool startups or scale-ups or large companies doing really innovative work. And they're talking about changing the world. And they're naive enough to think that they can change the world. The coolest part about it is the number of companies that are actually doing it. You come to Toronto or, you know, Vancouver or Montreal, we don't have the same sort of conversations about how are we in Canada going to change the world or build global changing companies. And I think we need more of that. I think we need more of what I like to call naive ambition in this country. People that are crazy enough to think that they can do it, because a few will actually get there. And the companies that they build will propel our prosperity as a nation for years and decades to come.
What's that saying about shoot for the moon and land on a star?
Something like that. Yeah,
well said. Let's talk a little bit about Wealthsimple's growth trajectory, because, you know, again, it's just not a long history here. But despite the fact there's only been 5 years or so, you've already diversified into the United States and the United Kingdom. What made you do that so early?
Part of this belief that Canadian companies, I think, settle for being Canadian companies. And I think we need to build more global champions in Canada. One of my favorite books on this topic is Why Mexicans Don't Drink Molson. It talks about seven or so different industries across Canada where we have all the ingredients to build global champions, and yet somehow we haven't figured out the recipe. And we don't want to follow that same narrative. We want to build a global champion based here in Canada. And we think we have the opportunity. We think that, you know, we've aligned ourselves with a partner that has global operations, you know, with Power Financial. We think that the industry is changing along the same lines across these three markets, you know, where technology is becoming increasingly important. You've got massive demographic shifts in who the clients of the future are going to be. And we think that a lot of the same themes around building a human brand and a really simple product that builds trust in a new kind of way with consumers is translatable across those markets. And so we want to take that, and we want to really build something that changes the landscape across those three countries.
Now, you're not just, you know, an innovator and a disruptor. You're now, you know, the CEO of an organization that you've built, which makes you a leader. Were you ready to be a leader? What makes you the leader that you are?
I don't know that I am. You know, I tell everybody on their first day at Wealthsimple that this is my first time as a CEO, and I've never done this before, and I need a lot of help, you know, and I work hard every single day to try to earn the seat that I'm in, but that we're in this together. And I think, you know, my approach around leadership in general, and I think the philosophy I've tried to take as a first time CEO building a company, is to try to be humble and confident at the same time. I think as a leader, people look to me to have a perspective. I have conviction, but I don't have all the answers. And so I need to have an open mind and remain humble and know that we're just getting started. And I think that that's a trait I try to cultivate. It's a trait I admire a lot in other leaders that I look to partner with. And
tell
and
me, who do you look up to?
Many. I mean, I think, you know, someone that we've just recently brought on board that I like to show up as an example at the company is a guy named JF Corville. JF was the former COO of RBC Wealth Management. You know, he had, I think, no fewer than 2,000 people reporting to him for the better part of a decade. And on day one at Wealthsimple, he had two.
And he doesn't have to wear a suit anymore. So there's an upside.
There's definitely an upside. You know, no dress codes here.
His clothing
for sure.
Budget just fine.
But I think it takes a certain type of special leader who doesn't have the ego around that and is willing to step into a role and roll up their sleeves and just do what it takes to build the business. And I really admire that.
What are you learning from him?
Lots. You know, I think one of the challenges we're facing as a business, we're about 250 people in the company now. And like you said, we're 5 years old. And so we've had to kind of build culture on the fly. We don't have decades of cultivating, you know, what this place is all about under our belts.
Ping pong table helps.
Ping pong table is part of it. But, you know, a culture of ping pong table does not make. And so I've learned a lot from him about scaling, about what leadership looks like at scale, especially around communication and stakeholder management. That's becoming an increasingly important part of our business, given that, you know, we now have a lot of clients, we have a lot of assets. So things like regulators, things like shareholders that have given us a lot of capital, and a big team are all really important constituents around the business, and finding the right way to manage that set of stakeholders is really important.
You referenced the importance of communications being a very big part of being a leader. Tell us more about how you're using communications as a tool and as a tactic, or perhaps even the strategy to build the team that you're building and to provide them the leadership that you are.
We think communication is something that we stand out for, both in our brand communications and internally. And we try to use it as like an opportunity to reinforce more than anything the purpose of the organization. And so one of the things I'm most proud of that we did last year was we took our brand team, which is usually working on our, you know, ad campaigns that we've been fortunate to win all sorts of awards for. We do all that work in-house because we think it's such an opportunity to create a new kind of brand in financial services that is human and relatable and all about great lifestyle. And we actually turned their attention to internal communications, and we had them help produce what we call our culture manual, which was trying to codify our company values, how we work, and why we exist, with the same quality and attention that we would give to an ad campaign that would run during the Super Bowl. And I think that that was one of the biggest moments of pride and most effective tools we've ever built for communication, because we've now got a common language around things like purpose and values.
Especially with international locations now.
Absolutely. And we have a piece of work that's shareable and consistent. And so we always know people are on the same page, and we invested enough that people feel really good about it. They want to show their family and friends. It's actually worked as a great recruiting tool for that purpose as well. And so I think that's one of the things that we use, is we try to treat communications with the importance it deserves and with the polish that we think that we're able to with the capabilities we've built here.
Now, we're talking about people, you know, as I travel the country and meet with businesses, our members at the Business Council of Canada or others, people issues seem to be paramount. What challenges are you facing in terms of finding talent?
It's the thing I spend the most time on right now is talent recruiting. And it's hard. It's really hard. I would say that for us, the biggest challenge I'm facing right now is the scale at which we're growing the company and the team. I'd love to hire people that have lived through this before so that we can avoid making the mistakes that maybe they've lived through at other organizations. There aren't that many companies in Canada that have scaled at this pace. And so there are a few, but the talent pool is much narrower than it would be in other places like in Silicon Valley. And so we're now just starting to enter this phase of actually trying to bring talent that maybe isn't locally based back to Canada or to Canada to help us fill those really hard roles or really hard experiences. We actually just hired a new chief people officer who's joining us from Netflix out of LA. And I'm thrilled. It's the first person we've actually pulled in from California. And I think we hope to do more and more of this.
Was the pitch?
So luckily she is an expat. So I think for personal reasons, loves the idea of coming home and being in Canada. And I think, you know, what's funny is in the last 2 months, the number of inbound calls I've had from expats that are in really exciting roles at the highest growth technology companies in the world that are seeing what's happening in Canada and a little disenfranchised with what's happening elsewhere. And it's created this opportunity when people are starting to seriously consider being a part of the Canadian story and wanting to help build a great Canadian champion. So I think we kind of have this window of opportunity in front of us as Canadians to pull some of our best talent back and really help us grow.
Well, that's very encouraging. What do you think is attracting them? And what are you doing to keep them when you get them? Because in today's world, everybody's seeking talent.
You know, there's a lot of talk these days about the opportunity for Canadians to attract the U.S. because of perhaps people's misgivings around the U.S. or whatever.
The political situation, you know, the guns, whatever it might be. But, you know, those could be moments in time.
Totally. My feeling is that the only way to do this sustainably is to create really exciting companies. Now, I talk about Waterloo. You know, how did Waterloo become what it is today? Such an awesome innovation center and talent pool. It wasn't because someone decided that Waterloo, you know, should be that. It's because RIM, at its heyday, was the most exciting company in the world to work for. You know, if you rewind the clock, you remember when BlackBerry was the most exciting company in the world. That's how you create talent engines, by building companies that are exciting places
magnets.
To be. And they become magnets for talent from all over the world, where the best and brightest want to come be part of this story. And so I think you need to have a really great story to tell. And I think we have a fantastic story to tell in Canada. It's only getting better. And lots of different companies are starting to tell that. And we, as a place to live, as a place to, for your family to be, we have lots of great things going for us in terms of our story. And now it's up to us to live up to it and create the companies that continue to be magnets for talent and only amplify that message.
Now, of course, part of the reality of running a business is you're regulated. Your stakeholders include government. How are you finding the regulated environment in Canada? You know, we always hear that we're overly regulated, but now you've got operations in two other countries. What's your experience vis-a-vis at least UK and US?
It's challenging. There's no question. I would say, you know, I think that there are really meaningful differences between the three countries from a regulatory standpoint. I always like to think that the US and the UK are on opposite ends of the spectrum and Canada is somewhere in the middle. The US, there is actually so little oversight. It's kind of scary how fast you can get a license to do things. But if you mess up, it is incredibly punitive. You know, you go to jail, you get fined a ton. And so, you know, for me, I've always defined the US as a punitive kind of regulatory environment. Whereas the UK, there is so much oversight. There is so much kind of red tape to getting approvals and getting through the hoops that it's preventative. It's hard to mess up actually in the UK. And I find that those are actually quite interesting, different approaches. So, you know, punitive versus preventative. And I think kind of somewhere in the middle, we have a little bit more of an oversight, I think, model than the US does. But I think the one thing that Canada has going for it from a regulatory perspective is how approachable our regulators are. It's hard to pick up the phone and call the FCA, you know, the CEO of the FCA and talk about the future of blockchain and AI and the implications for, you know, capital markets. Maureen Jensen and Pat Chaukas, you know, are out there in the community trying to understand the impact of these technologies. They're trying to get ahead of it. They want input and feedback.
Canadian regulators.
These are the Canadian regulators. And the CEO of the OSC and the head of their Launchpad, which is their innovation kind of arm that they've launched, to try and get ahead of these things and really be collaborative with industry on what the right way forward is for regulatory relations.
Do you believe governments might get more involved in the industry in terms of oversight and regulation, or will they kind of keep the equilibrium that you've identified? Because, I mean, look in the news, right? I mean, the data, the privacy, the security, the cyber, the hacking, the things that are dominating the news these days that are likely to drive public angst. Yeah. Could create regulations, whether they were targeted at you or not.
For sure. I mean, we saw that first with GDPR, you know, in Europe last year. And I think right now, the sentiment right now is for sure, with respect to all the challenges that Facebook has run into over the last year, that there will be some form of regulation that comes into the social media and the technology industry like it hasn't before. And in general, I think that's a good thing. You know, as a highly regulated financial services firm, I'm someone that believes that regulation has a place and I think can be constructed well. I guess what I have learned as a highly regulated financial services firm is there is a downside and there are ways to do regulation wrong. And I think the only advice, and I've given this directly to government, is that a rules-based system is really hard to get right because rules that might feel right today quickly become antiquated. When the thing that matters most is you get the principles.
Principles, right.
Yeah. Correct. And that's one of the challenges of the securities industry in which we operate is there's a lot of rules. For instance, when we launched our business, there is such a rule that we have a responsibility as a, what's called a portfolio manager to make sure that when we put clients in a portfolio, it is suitable for their needs, for their risk tolerance, for their goals. And that makes total sense. But the rule was that the only way to assess a client's needs was to do it in a face-to-face conversation. Hard to do that as a technology company. Hard to do that if you're a young professional that doesn't want to meet an advisor face-to-face. And so we had to spend a lot of time educating regulators about why that rule didn't make sense. And originally we had to get exemptions from the rules and then over time actually had to get things changed. And so that's the challenge of rules. Whereas the principle of make sure clients are in suitable investment portfolios for their needs. You can meet that in a whole myriad of different ways. And that's the key to get right.
Now, we're getting a good feel for who your customers are, but I want you to talk about who is your target customer. And are millennials really any different than the rest of us when it comes to saving and investing?
You know, what's funny is about our business is as we've grown, we cover a much broader set of clients out there. I think our youngest client's 18 and our oldest client now is 102. So a pretty broad segment of investors. We skew younger. So I think about 85% of our clients are under 45, which is probably the inverse of the investment industry. So we are really capturing the next generation of clients out there. And I do think that the needs between millennials and young professionals and older investors are different. And we've had to evolve as we've started to get more and more close to retiring clients to meet those needs. And your needs change from the desire to save and invest, maybe buy your first house, maybe start setting up, you know, a college saving fund for kids, to am I going to outlive my savings when I retire? Am I going to be able to retire? Do I have the proper inheritance set up if you're in such a fortunate position to think about, you know, what you might be able to pass on to the next generation? And so needs do change, and we've had to, you know, evolve the sophistication of our offering to cater to a, you know, a more mature audience as our business has grown.
Let's pivot back a little bit about sort of the journey here again, because I want to cover off whether this was a straight line or did you have adversity? Did you experience setbacks?
There have been a lot of challenges and setbacks.
What was your worst day in this?
You know, so this might be another cute story of hustle, right? As you try to start something. So when we launched the business, there's a very important part in our business that's kind of behind the scenes people don't see, which is called a brokerage or a custody platform. It's where money that people invest with us actually sits and where we trade on, you know, stocks and bonds on your behalf, that sort of thing. And when we launched the business, we didn't do any of that ourselves. We had to partner with another company that provided those services. And we wanted to launch this totally digital, really simple to use investment platform. But the partner that we had to work with in the back end required paperwork to open up accounts for clients. So they refused when we tried to launch the business to enable us to open up accounts digitally. So what we had to do when we tried to open up accounts for clients every day was, at the end of the day, my co-founder and myself would sit down at a computer and print off every application we got that day from, you know, sometimes tens or hundreds of clients, and sign them and then drive them up to our back office partner so that they would open up the accounts for us in the morning. And this is a totally non-scalable, you know, sort of thing. And when you're not dealing with technology, actually a lot can go wrong and a lot can break because paperwork gets lost and clients get angry. I just remember so many angry phone calls in those early days when things went wrong that, you know, there were moments of doubt, like, are we ever going to be able to create this sort of experience that we aspire to? And ultimately, we found out that the only way to solve this problem was to buy our own brokerage. So we acquired a company and spent 6 months trying to totally reinvent the back office around what it takes to support a business like ours. And thankfully, that's not an issue anymore. But, you know, there were some pretty dark days, a lot of angry phone calls in those first few months.
What are the major challenges that you're facing today to take Wealthsimple to the next level? And what does that next level look like?
The thing we struggle with the most right now is there are so many opportunities in front of us, picking the right ones. I think our biggest challenge is going to have to be focusing on the few places where we can actually win. So, you know, an example, in the last year, we launched, you know, two new product lines, a savings account and a trading account. The trading account, you know, within 4 weeks of us launching just a waiting list online, the product didn't exist yet for it. We had over 120,000 people sign up. So that's kind of our challenge, is balancing the excitement around all of the opportunities in front of us and the need to focus to get things right.
Do you see it? I mean, it's all privately held today. Do you see a day that you go public?
Yeah, that's explicitly, that's our intention. We want to create the next great independent financial services business in Canada. And, you know, a public offering would be the best way to achieve that.
And in the meantime, if somebody came up and maybe they already have knocked on your door or sent you an email and said, "Hey, Mike, we'd like to buy." Does that happen?
Listen, I think in some ways we've sold a majority stake in the business to Power. And the reason that we did that was because they were aligned with what our vision was for the business that we wanted to build.
And you were able to scale up pretty quickly with capital investment that would have taken a long time otherwise.
For sure. For sure. And I think one of the unique things about Power is, despite being this large publicly traded company, it's a family-controlled enterprise. And what's unique about that is the long-term thinking that it affords to partner with a family that can have a very long-term view to the businesses that they want to support and build. And so they've been a wonderful partner to us.
How did that come about?
the your, partnership yeah. with Power.
How did you meet them? How did that come about? Now you're, you know, full disclosure to our listeners, but you're a next generation leader, next generation member of the Business Council of Canada. Obviously, Power and others that you interact with are represented there as well. But did it come through that, or did you know someone separately, or did they cold call you?
I was introduced to Paul Demery III.
Who's now your board chair.
Who's now the chair of our board. Maybe the week we launched the company. And the person who introduced us was Som Safe.
Oh, I know Som, of course.
One of our very first investors.
Purpose. And,
the founder of Purpose, an ETF pioneer in the country. And he introduced us just, you know, you are two young people in finance with some big ideas about the future. I think you'll enjoy meeting. No context, no need or no, you know, hey, there's a deal to be done here. Just, I think you guys will enjoy it.
Did you do your homework on who Paul was?
Yeah, yeah. You know, most people, I think, operating in the financial services would have some idea.
Prepared hard for that meeting, did you?
I did. And we hit it off. We had a great meeting. We realized we had a lot of shared ideas, excitements around the opportunities in financial services over the coming years. And we decided that we'd just, you know, check in every so often. And so every month or so when Paul was passing through Toronto, we'd grab a, you know, breakfast or a coffee or something. And after about 6 months of, you know, dating, Paul came to one of these meetings and said, "Hey, Mike, you know, we both see this industry evolving in similar ways. You've got the team. We've got the capital. Why don't we figure out something to do here together?" And, you know, it took 6 months to hash out a deal because these things are complex, but ultimately decided that there was a path.
No doubt lawyers were involved.
Yes.
That's how they got complex.
No kidding. But, you know, it was a very organic thing. And I think, you know, a lot of credit to Paul because this is a difficult thing to support. At the time we had, you know, I think less than 10 people on the team, maybe 1,000 clients, far from a proven business. And they were prepared to commit a significant amount of capital to scale up what was really just, you know, an idea with some proof points, but had a lot more unproven than proven at that stage.
You mentioned, you know, the role that leaders play in building teams. How important was the team in your ability to get an investor like Power to really go all in the way that they did? Because it's about leadership. It's about the product. But these days, it's also about the talent.
It's all about the team. And I think that why Power made the original investment in Wealthsimple was the realization they probably couldn't hire our team because the sorts of folks we were able to recruit, they don't want to work at a big insurance company. They want to work at a startup that's trying to change the world, that's trying to do good, that's trying to will something into existence. The, you know, the excitement and the fear that comes along with that experience. Is different than what you get in a large corporate environment. And I think that's one of the opportunities of partnering with firms like us from a, you know, big incumbent standpoint is the opportunity to tap into a talent pool that may not be interested in going to work.
You know, because you said this, I'm going to ask, do you think they find it ironic now that technically they are working for a big, because the investment is from so large that, of an investment from Power?
I think what's really important, and Power's been very good at this, is, you know, ultimately our ambition is to take the business public. And we still make it very clear that every employee at Wealthsimple has equity in the business. So we make option grants to every single person who joins the company so that they feel like and are owners and operate like owners with the same upside opportunity that would come with joining another startup, you know, out there that isn't controlled by, you know, by a large corporate. And that's been really important for us to preserve so that we can continue to hire the kind of talent that we need to scale this business. And, you know, that's something Power understands and has been a good partner to get with.
So what advice would you have for, you know, young entrepreneurs? Not that you're an old one, but you know, you're a veteran at 5 years now. What would you say? What would you say to yourself if you were, you know, rewind 5 years that you need to do to be successful?
You know, I think that what I've learned in the last 5 years is there's only really a few things that matter. You got to latch on to a real problem and have a solution for it. And that's, you know, this concept of product market fit. And I find that as you scale, it gets more and more tempting to get back into, you know, I started my career in consulting where you approach problems as...
You're at McKinsey, right?
Yeah. Where you approach problems as market opportunities. You know, here's this big, giant market. There's got to be something in that that we could capture. that's not a customer problem. You know, the customer problem is an N of one, and it's best if you yourself are the person facing that problem. So one of the challenges I try to keep us, you know, very aware of as we scale is staying close to the problem. You know, we're all customers ourselves of Wealthsimple. We are all customers of the new products we launch. We understand them deeply. We want them for ourselves. And I think that's a really important lesson that I've learned is A, understand the problem, and then B, launch the simplest possible way to solve it. So for me, you know, I told you the story of the spreadsheet. The spreadsheet was the simplest solution to help people invest. If I had approached the problem as, hey, I want to start a financial services business that helps people invest, I would have said, no freaking way. I've never worked in this industry. I don't have any of the licenses required to manage money. Where does one even start, right, to do this?
What's your value proposition? What do you even know?
And so we started with a spreadsheet and we got feedback. And that feedback was valuable insight that let us iterate. And we keep on iterating. We've been iterating ever since. You know, we tell this funny story that we were fortunate. A few years ago, we won what's called a Webby Award, which is like the Oscars of the internet, as the best financial services website in the world. I think if most companies
really
won that
say
award,
that again, you're the best financial website company in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really exciting. It's a whole New York based award ceremony, red carpet, star studded.
Congratulations.
Affair. So thank you
That's
very much.
That's a big deal. I'm impressed.
It was fun.
I don't impress easily, by the way. That is very impressive.
Well, thank you. It was certainly a lot of fun. And I think if most companies were to win that kind of an award, what they do is they maybe even change the homepage of the website to say Webby Award winning website. They tell their design team, congratulations. Now, don't touch a pixel. Keep it, you know, it's award winning. Keep it award winning. What did we do is the next day we went to our design team and said, awesome, tear it down and start again. And we did. And we designed it from scratch. The next year we won the award again with a brand new website as the best in the world. And that's a mindset that there is no such thing as good enough or done. And you can always do better. You have more data, more insights. And the only way to keep ahead of the curve is to keep reinventing yourself.
You know, what you just said applies to countries too, I think. One of the criticisms of Canada is that we are a comfortable country, that we've taken settling literally to some extent. Are you the next generation that's going to change that for us? Are you the ones who are going to make us compete?
Well, I think there's a lot that has to change about Canada. You know, I mentioned earlier in this chat that I'm nervous about our future. You know, if you think about Canada today and so much of the prosperity we enjoy really comes from two industries. It comes from, we've talked about this.
Yes, we have.
Pulling things out of the ground and financing that work. And those have been great engines of growth and prosperity for the country for many years. But that cannot be the story we tell ourselves in 20 years from now. You know, the world is changing so fast, we need to be able to keep up and we need to diversify our economy, you know, much more so than it is today into a broader set of industries.
Yeah, the whole tangible, intangible economy. And
absolutely. And so I think that, you know, and I talked about why Mexicans don't drink Molson. Here are seven industries or however many the book talks about where we could be global champions and we have not made it work.
And why do you think that is though at the core? What is it?
I think that there's lots of reasons. I do think that, Canadians have played safe for a long time, both in mentality that we like to play it safe. We don't like to step on toes. We don't need to take too much risk. I think the government has created a safe economic environment in Canada for certain industries that don't have necessarily as much international competition as maybe other countries would experience. And I think in general, there's this Canadian mindset we talked about before of, are we ambitious enough? Do we want to win? And I think that there have been moments in the last 10 years where we have wanted to win and it's been exceptional. And my favorite is this is the two that I guess it's a little more than 10 years ago now, but the Vancouver Olympics, where we set out a program to own the podium. We said we want to win the Olympics. We want to win on the global stage. And you
and
know
we
what?
Did.
We won.
Yeah, we did.
And it felt great. You know, it was so un-Canadian, but it felt great. And we proved to ourselves that winning
was awesome.
As I joked,
it was the one day we acted like Americans.
Right? You know, and I think that we don't have to confuse winning with sacrificing or compromising on Canadian values. I don't think that there has to be some trade-off between winning and being humble or wanting to win and being humble. There's a difference between bravado and arrogance and saying more than what substance would suggest.
Correct.
Whereas I think that we can do it in the Canadian ways. Let's win, but let's have substance to back it up. And I'd love to see that more of us have that ambition. And I think we need it as a country to continue to prosper in the future.
Well said. Very inspirational. Thank you for that. Now, you have been seen to be a disruptor Your business is seen to be a disruptor to some of the traditional institutions that you've mentioned. Do you worry about disruption coming at you? And what are you doing to manage that?
I guess my view is I actually don't like being called a disruptor. And my view is technology is an enabler. And those that embrace technology will continue to thrive. I mean, one of our big and growing parts of our business is this platform that supports traditional financial advisors that meet face-to-face with clients. And the industry loves to say that we are disrupting them. We are enabling them. We're building technology tools to support advisors to thrive in the 21st century. And so for me, so long as we continue to have this mindset as what are the things that will enable our business in the future and not be afraid of them, but embrace them, we will continue to thrive as a business in the same way that I think advisors that embrace technology will continue to thrive.
All right. Look, before we wrap, I want to get to know you a little bit better than just the business guy and the startup guy and the entrepreneur. Tell me how you relax.
So these days, there's not too much time for it, you know, with the business, but I try to make a lot of time for my family. So I mentioned I have a young daughter at home and a wonderful partner.
How do you find the work-life balance?
To me, we actually stopped talking about work-life balance at Wealthsimple and replaced it with the concept of work-life fit. I love to work. And I hate this concept of, you know, you have to choose
either or.
I choose to work a lot, but I fit the things that are really important and I value into my life. And that's a personal decision. But I think that everybody has to figure out what that means for them. And for me, that means finding time for family. So I try to leave the office these days at 5 o'clock, four nights a week, so that I can put my daughter to bed and I can feed her dinner and we can hang out before she goes to sleep. And then I work again after that at night. Whereas before she was born, I used to, you know, eat most of my meals here at the office and work late. And then outside of that, what do I like to do when I relax? One of my biggest hobbies and passions in life is canoeing, of all things. So very Canadian. I love canoe trips, getting out in the park, like Algonquin Park, for a few days, totally disconnected. It is my happy place. And so as often as I can get up to a lake on a canoe, that's my favorite thing.
What one word describes you?
I think people will describe me as nice. How Canadian is that?
How Canadian is that?
I value that, though. I think that...
Because it beats the alternative, doesn't it?
I remember a very poignant thing from me was when I was in grade school. I won an award, which stands out for me as it's an elected award. Your classmates vote on it as the mensch of the year. And mensch is a Yiddish word that literally just translates as man, but is generally means like a nice person, a good person. And it stands out for me because my grandmother, who was a very important influence on my life and passed away many years ago, the look of pride on her face when I won that award is something that stands out to me as one of the most important accomplishments of my life. And I've always taken that as a very important thing that, you know, when you leave this world, there's only one thing you take. And this is what she would always teach me growing up is a good name. And so having a good name and being a nice person, I think is a very important thing.
Nothing beats the wisdom of our grandparents, does it? I heard the same thing. Now you said something that I'm going to call you out on a little bit. I'm curious. Now, you know, we're just getting to know each other still. This is our second or third meeting. You said I'm a nice guy and I got awards for being a nice guy way back in school. A mensch, you said. And yet you're very competitive. You don't even care about your competition, but you're very competitive and you're very driven. How do we square that circle?
Yeah. Don't let the nice guy fool you. The other award I won is, you know, the hustler of the year on all the sports teams, because I was never any good to win the MVP. You know, I was never good enough at sports, but I always out-hustled everybody because I like to win. And I don't think that there's a problem with winning graciously.
Or winning nicely.
But it feels great to win. And I think that being hungry to win is a really important component of being a leader and an entrepreneur.
What gives you the biggest rush?
These days, one of the coolest things in the business is from the business. And it's when something happens that I have nothing to do with. I love seeing like the team win and just being surprised because it was either some new product or new feature got shipped. And I had no idea it was coming.
Look at your face light up. How genuine of a response is this? That's great to hear.
It's just a really cool feeling to see how unimportant you are but how cool your team is and how capable they are. I think that's one of the coolest experiences.
Do you describe yourself as an introvert or an extrovert? What are you?
I'm an introvert, for sure.
You know, it's amazing how many leaders are. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think there are different kinds of leaders. You know, I often get asked, what kind of founder CEO am I? And I generally see like there are two kinds of archetypes that I'm familiar with. There are the Steve Jobs and Elon Musks of the world that are often the smartest person in the room. And you walk into a room, you probably think they are, and it's made known that they're the smartest people in the room.
If not, they'll let you know they are.
Exactly. And their signature is on every product and everything that gets shipped out the door. And often they're better. Like, these are true visionary people. I am not that. And so my role is to hire people way smarter than me and give them all the support in the world to do the best work of their lives. And if I can achieve that, then that's how we'll build a wonderful company. And I think it's just, that's my style, and it's a different one than other leaders that I think can be more extroverted and have a lot to say. I'd much prefer to be in the background and be a support figure.
Well, thank you for sharing your story and the story of Wealthsimple. Something tells me that the best is yet to come. It's something that we may come back when you've, you know, gone from just being a few billion-dollar company to something really substantial someday. but in all seriousness, we appreciate you joining us. I'm sure you've listened to our podcast, and you know we end the podcast with a bit of a word game. So I'm going to give you a word, and you're going to tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
Let's do it.
Millennials.
Capable.
Investors.
Smart.
Competition.
Overrated.
Entrepreneurs.
Hungry.
Disruption.
Status quo.
Family.
Important.
Canada.
The best.
Thanks for doing this, Michael.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks again to Mike Ketchen for being my guest on this episode of Speaking of Business. Subscribe now for more conversations with Canada's top innovators, entrepreneurs, and business leaders. Search Speaking of Business wherever you find podcasts, or visit speakingofbiz.ca, that's biz with a Z, to join our email list and follow us on social media. Until next time, I'm Goldie Hyder.